I'm Wilma Allen, and I'm here this afternoon with Marcia Dean Phelps, who is a longtime resident of American Beach here in Honolulu Island, and we're going to talk about some of the things she remembers about American Beach and how she happened to be there and how she happened to fall in love with it and anything else that Ms. Pratt wants to tell us about. And we're making this tape for the Amelia Island Museum of History as part of its heritage project. So, we're going to start. Ms. Phelps, would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Marcia Dean Phelps. I'm a native of Jacksonville, and that's in Duval County, just across the county line, south of Fernandina Beach. And I've been coming to American Beach all of my life. Coming to the beach was a summer experience for me, as it was for many people, because you came for recreation. I didn't go to school here. I never worked here. And so when I came to American Beach, it was sheer pleasure and fun. Even as a child, you would come in the summertime, it's hot. I was born in 1944, and there were no swimming pools for black people in Duval County or any place nearby. So if you wanted recreation, cooling activities, water recreation, the only place for you was to come to American Beach. And coming to American Beach was like going to a place called Paradise Island. I remember Paradise Island. There are a lot of places named Paradise Island. I remember it from the story of Pinocchio. But that's what American Beach was. It was just a pleasure island. And as a little girl, I came. And how did they get here?
You would come with your mother and father and stay for, what, a week?
Yeah, that's how I came. I came with my mother and father and my two brothers and my two dogs. And we would stay for 2 weeks. That was in the first 2 weeks in the month of July. But by then, I might have been about 10 years old. And I had been coming to American Beach before I was 10 years old. I had been coming to American Beach for as long as I could remember. And we would come with my mom and my dad, or we would come with my church, or we would come with my school, or we would come with social clubs, groups. And the older I got, I could bring myself and I could come with friends. But I had been coming to American Beach, and it was like something good, something that you don't see it early, that it's something that you think that you will do all of your life. And so all of my life I have been doing American Beach. It will come a time when American Beach won't be a thing that I do. But I do live here now, and so I hope to be here for as long as I'm on the planet.
Yes. So, Marcia, when did you move in? How long have you lived here permanently?
I've lived here since 1988, so that's 29 years. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming as a little girl, there were homes. I went to Second Baptist Church in Jacksonville. And Second Baptist, as well as every church of any size, had people, church members, who owned homes on American Beach. And so at Second Baptist, Gladys Vault and Charles Vault, they were all Sunday school superintendent and husband and wife, Sunday school superintendent and choir director and, you know, pretty much everything in the church. And they had a house and they had a motel and they had accommodations for Second Baptist Church. And so I would come with them, and then about 1954-ish, I was about 10, my family started coming to the A.L. Lewis Motel, and that's where we stayed. And it was Paradise Island.
So, like you, Marcia, in some of these books that I have, several of them by you, about American Beach, which tells so much about it, and they're so well written and interesting to read. But they, it makes it sound like just the upper crust of the black community came to American Beach.
Oh, right, the truth.
Maybe I misread it.
It was, no, you didn't misread it. You know, like sometimes we want to paint a picture, and we, as I say, it was Pleasure Island, it was Paradise Island, so it was good times. But American Beach was good time for everybody of black skin. And they came not just like me, crossing the Duval County line, crossing the Camden County line, coming in from Georgia. They came, there were excursions, bus trips. In Washington, D.C., people would sponsor bus trips to American Beach. They came from Miami, Florida, which is surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. What in the world are you coming up here to American Beach for? They came from Texas along the Gulf of Mexico. What are you coming to American Beach for?
What did they come for?
Oh,
there were some other beaches in between that.
I often think of that. That here you are leaving this waterway, leaving the ocean, leaving the Gulf, and you are coming here just after you hopping across the county line. Well, you are coming here because it was a place where you were wanted. It was a place where you were welcomed. And what was different about it is, you know, it was a segregation time before 1964. You may have had public facilities, but they weren't public for black people. And so for blacks who wanted this type of recreation, they just had to make the sacrifice, make the expense, and do those long travels to American Beach. And what was unique about American Beach, you could stay until you ran out of money or until you had to go back to work. And, yeah, was it for rich people? No. Rich people were the ones, and they weren't rich, they just looked rich. They were perceived rich, and they certainly were rich by my standards. But people, they had homes, and so the other people would come on day trips, and you stayed as long as your money would last you. And if you had friends like my church came and other people's churches came, or if you had friends, you could stay at your friends, and like you had motels, but people who owned homes rented rooms as well. Mm-hmm. And so when the A.L. Lewis Motel opened in 1950, that brought in a whole lot of other people. And at that time, it was like a duplex. You had a living room, a kitchen, a bedroom, a bathroom, and the accommodations could sleep four people. And it was...
So when the people came to American Beach, they didn't come to Amelia Island. They didn't come to Fernandina Beach. They went to American Beach, and that's where they pretty much stayed.
To American Beach.
So that you could. And I've seen some pictures of all the people on the beach, and everybody's having a great time. So I would imagine that on either side, it was pretty open beach.
It wasn't nothing but some woods. It was open, wide open.
So there would be not very many people on north and south of America.
Right.
But you couldn't go over there? You couldn't spread out a little bit?
You could spread out to the south. You could spread out to the north. But you certainly didn't want to spread out away from Evans Rendezvous.
Yeah,
didn't want to spread out from the music. You didn't spread out from the clubs and things. But some spread out, because to the south, there was this little community, Franklin Town, black community. Uh-huh. And there had been entertainment up in there, but it's sort of like you want to pick the most appealing spot and where the happenings are. So, no, Franklin Town was...
And you probably liked the crowds.
Oh, you love the crowds. Yeah. It was like being at Coney Island. Mm-hmm. It was like being on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. I mean, it was just people wall to wall.
Cool.
And you just couldn't have a bad time at American Beach, even if it rained. You just could not have a bad time. The bad time came when it was time for you to fold your tent and go back home.
Yeah.
You know, and the later it got and the longer you had stayed, that reckoning time would come. You know, I'm out of money, I'm out of this, and, you know.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about your mom and dad and, you know, where they were from and how they got involved in whatever they were involved in?
Oh, I don't know what they were involved in. I don't know what you mean, whether it was their work on the beach.
Work or, you know, that they could take time off to come to the beach for 2 weeks. They must have had pretty decent jobs that they could do. And anyway, just can make all kinds of guesses, but you got to tell me.
Well, my dad, I'm a Jacksonville native, and my dad is a Jacksonville native, and I'm a third-generation Floridian. My dad worked for the railroad, and that was a pretty good job. We were not affluent. We were not rich, but when we would come in the summertime, I thought we were rich. That was my first ever experience of living in a public facility like hotel, motel. Never had done that before, 1954. My mom married my dad in 1935, and instead of going to college, she was so much in love with him, and she married him. And after about 20 years of being married to him, she realized that she had to change her luck. Mama worked at the cigar factory. What's the name of it? Edwards. King Edwards cigar factory over there in Jacksonville. So Mama worked over there as a domestic, I guess, cleaning the floors and the toilets and things like that. So enough of that. Mama goes to beauty culture school, and she becomes a beautician. And that too, laborious hard work. Enough of that. And then finally it clicked, like, baby, you got to get yourself back in college. And so she had been out of high school 20 years, and she went back to college. And then she became a teacher. And that was when, and like I said, I've been coming to the beach all my life. Mm-hmm. But when Mama became a teacher, Dad is working on the railroad, regular work every day. That afforded us to be able to have two luxurious weeks at the beach. And we used to travel on the train and things of that nature, but the beach was the best vacation that we ever had. And the reason it was the best is because all of us came. My two brothers, my mom, my dad, and my two dogs came to the beach. And so that was the kind of things that they did. They both, you know, ended up with good paying jobs. They started out when they first married in '35. They started out, Mama was maybe making $6 a day, Daddy was making about $7 a day, and they were orderlies at the hospital. It was Duval County, I guess Duval Medical Center, over there in Springfield, off of 8th Street, where the UF of Shands Hospital is now. Uh-huh. But that's where my mom and daddy.
Because I wondered about your mom, especially because you have been a wonderful supporter of libraries, both here and in Jacksonville. And the genealogy section in our library is named in memory of your mother. So I was curious about how she influenced you such that you would do that. Can you?
Well, see, I didn't know growing up, and even after becoming an adult, I didn't know how much my mother had influenced me. But as I found myself having interest in those things that she had interest in, and she loved history, and she would always be reading, and she would talk about things in history, English history, and then I found myself like, Marcia, you like telling stories, and you enjoy history. And Mama traveled, you know, her entire life. So she had a great influence on me. She carried me to the library. I remember being in the library before being in public school. And the only I had one library, and that was the Wilder Park Library in Jacksonville. It was a library that was built for the colored population. And so that was my library, and I absolutely loved it. And then when I was in first grade, I went to a school called College Park. And that school, College Park, was a three-story frame building on the campus of Edward Waters College on Kings Road.
Oh, nice.
And
that's
Kings Road and Spire. No, not Kings Road and Spire. It's Kings Road and Tyler. I'll just call it Kings Road and Tyler. And so that's where I went to school. And one day, I'm in first grade. I'm a little girl. I'm 5 years old. And one day something happened that I remember that day. I don't remember anything leading up to it. And my teacher name was Laura Morrison. And Ms. Morrison said, "All right, children, everybody get your belongings." I guess the only belonging I had was a tablet or a pencil. And we had to get our belongings and line up. And we went outside and we went down the streets. And the whole school went down the street. As far as I was concerned, the whole school went. I know my class went. And mm-hmm. Maybe they called off names and told, you know, certain ones to, you know, get in this line. I was in that line. I was in first grade. And we walked down. I said Tyler, but I will whip it and make it Fairfax. Fairfax not it either, but I can't remember. But at any rate, we walked down the street and we walked through a path. And we were like on 7th and Fairfax. That's where the school was. And we walked down this path, and we got to 9th and Fairfax. And then we went down 9th Street. 9th Street was the street that I lived on. And we went down 9th Street. We were in about the 1700 block. I lived in the 1400 block. Anyhow, and then we got down to Spire Street, and we went north on Spire Street, walking and walking. And then it was like all of a sudden, here I saw a big, big school. It wasn't framed. It was a ranch-style school. It had a center with a high, high ceiling and wings of brick on each side of it. It was a brand new school. And that school was my school. And they named that school Susie E. Talbot. They named it after a lady who had made significant contributions towards the welfare of children in Jacksonville. And so they named it after her. And Susie Talbot actually lived across the street from my College Park school. And that was my first grade year. Starting out at College Park, then going over to the new school, and then it became New College Park, and then they later named it Susie Talbot. And I could remember when it was time to go home, I didn't know how to get home because the school was on 13th and Spires. And I didn't know how to get to 9th and Whitner, but the children across the streets from me and down the streets from me were bigger than me. And somehow or another, you know, I guess they said, you know, you follow the big children, and we just followed those big children at home, and kept on following the big children until I learned eventually how to go and come.
Very different than today, isn't it?
Yes.
So then you must have always been a really good student, I bet. And then did you go from high school right to college?
Yeah, I did. I was a good student, but I think in my middle school years, I slacked off, and I guess I had more focus on buddies and talking and not listening and not doing and blah. So my grades slacked off in middle school. But by the time I got to college, you know, I perked up and, mm-hmm. and did well.
And where'd you go to college?
I went back to my first school, Ever Waters College.
And
I lived on 9th Street.
Yeah.
And Ever Waters College was near. But mm-hmm. I went to Ever Waters College because my mama would not send me to Tuskegee Institute. Mm-hmm. As I said, mama read a lot, I read a lot, and I would read about George Washington Carver, and I wanted to go to Tuskegee Institute. But mama and daddy did not have that money to send a Florida child to Alabama. Mm-hmm. Now, they could have sent me to Florida A&M University. But, as I said, I was not a good student in high school. And, you know, this is not, I'm not going to throw my money away and send you up here to Tallahassee. And you go up there and go fool and not get your lessons and things like that. So you go 2 years at Edward Waters College. When you finish that, then you go on over to Florida A&M, and then you can get your degree in library science. That's just what I did. But along the way, you know, I did was a fool. I got married when I was at Ever Waters College, and, you know, they didn't appreciate that.
Your parents or the school?
My mama and daddy. Oh, man, I could feel the pain in my daddy right now and the disappointment in my mama. But I was 19 and did what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's what we do, don't we?
Yeah.
So you got married, and did you drop out of school then?
You know, my mama had such an influence on me that, you know, you might have gotten married, girl, but you ain't dropping out of no school. And no, I didn't drop out. I went straight on from Ever Waters College, and my husband, it was when, 63, so something was happening, wartime-like, and so I guess leading up to Vietnam or something, and the Army drafted him, and he had to go to the Army, so it wasn't nothing for me to do but go to school, and I went to school. Yeah.
Hmm. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I know Maple Pratt, when I spoke to her, she mentioned how important her mother was in uh-huh. influencing her and her brother to keep uh-huh. up their schooling and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And really, really, really. And she mentioned it more than her father, but her mother uh-huh. really,
yes.
really influenced her. And, yeah.
And I thank, you know, every time I give thanks and appreciation, I'm thankful that my mama didn't let me, you know, I'm 19, I know what I'm doing, didn't take her hands off of me, that she had already paid for that summer. So I married the end of my sophomore year. She didn't know that. Just me and the husband went, me and him went over the county line to Georgia, Camden County. I think you could get married in one day, and we went over there one day. And so, you know, I waited until summertime, time for me to go to summer school. And after Mama had bought my summer clothes, they're like, "Look here, Mama, I'm married and I'm not going to school." And it was like, "You might be married, but you going to school. I paid that tuition for you to hit up there at Tallahassee, and you gone." And like I said, in between that time, the Army picked him up. And so I went to school, and I thank God Mama didn't take her hands off me. And while he was in the Army, then the whatever you get, the allotment check that you get, I used that allotment check to pay my tuition and stuff like that. So it worked out real good for me.
Good, good. And then you went right into being a librarian.
Yes, I
and
did.
And then you worked your way up to, what were you in charge of, all the children's library section somewhere?
Oh, no, I was a school librarian, and I just had one school, and that school,
oh.
one school at a time. And that school, I was the librarian in the school. Uh-huh. So my first job, I finished A&M in 1965, and it just so happens in 1965, this little school, there was another brick school being built, and I was assigned to that school. I was the first librarian at S.A. Hull Elementary School, and the principal at S.A. Hull was the man who was the principal at College Park, and Susie E. Talbot. When I went there, Professor Leroy B. Jackson. So that was my first principal. And in terms of learning a work ethic, of respecting authority, of policies, I learned that from Professor Leroy B. Jackson. Couldn't have had a better teacher.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, because that information helps me get a background for you as the person who wrote these books about American Beach. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me because I have these books I got out of the library, and they're yours, and there's a couple of other people that wrote about American
Yes.
Beach. And they all have a different perspective. And yours is great because you live there. There's another mm-hmm. one, Mr.
Well,
Russ Reimer. He did not live there.
There's Annette Myers, who was a native of Nassau County, Fernandina
Beach. That's right. So they mm-hmm. all have kind of a different focus
yeah.
and a different different way of remembering things and presenting them, which I think is pretty interesting, because here at the museum, when you are, like, I am asking you questions, it's what kind of questions do you ask? What kinds of things are important to keep in the record? And I wondered, what made you decide to write a book about American Beach? Why did you think that was a valuable way to spend your time? I know you probably found it super interesting to study it.
Yes.
But did you feel it was important to preserve the history, or what were your motivations?
I was motivated the entire time, and I still am motivated and still find things to capture about American Beach. And so there, as I did this, it wasn't to be a book. I did not, it wasn't my dream to, I'm going to write a book. But I wrote a paper. It was 10 pages. At the end of that paper, and this was in 1991, at the end of those 10 pages, I said, there are a million people who have experienced American Beach, and there are a million stories. Annette has one of those millions. Russ Reimer has one of those millions. And Marcia Dean Phelps has the first of the million that was written about American Beach. Now, why did I say 1991? Burney Park was being dedicated in 1991, the public park on American Beach. So with that, as I said, I'm learning and picking up the ways of my mom and not even knowing it. And so as we were preparing, when I said we, the community, as we were preparing for this wonderful celebration, this acquisition of a park on American Beach and dedicating that park, I wanted to know more than I knew. What more than I knew was, I wanted to know, well, look here now, how long have we been here on American Beach? I know you were here when I got here in 1944, born. But when did it get to be American Beach? You know, it's always been here. So when did it come? And so I asked, and I'm not getting an answer. I'm getting about when, approximately, but you know, I just couldn't accept. You know, we've been here about 50 years. Not when you're going to do something tangible. Not when you're going to have this brochure to pass out. I need to know exactly when you got here. And then the other thing, there were people who were saying, so I got the first house. I got the first house. This one got the first house. I'm like, wait a minute now. Who had the first house? I needed to know that. And, you know, there were about four people with the first house. No, wait a minute. You don't even know when the beach started, but yet you got the first house. And then how much? How much did we have to pay to get American Beach? And so I got different figures on how much we had to pay. So, of course, would begin research, and I go up to the first place. I go to the library. There wasn't anything in the library. There was absolutely nothing in the library. And then I came to this museum, and there was nothing in this museum. And the reason there was nothing in the library and nothing in the museum was because American Beach for the colored people was insignificant to the recorders of the history on Amelia Island about, you know, our founders, our architects, our homes, our churches. I don't need to know nothing about you colored people down there lighting fires, drinking liquor, having a good time. Yeah, it's insignificant. So when I didn't find it there, that still, you know, my history was here. The place was there. I did know that the insurance company, but here, this is 1991. The insurance company went defunct in 1987, so I don't have no Air Force insurance company to look at, and the library don't have anything in the vertical files and things like that, because it just wasn't significant. It wasn't history. Huh? And so, where did you go, Marsha? I went to the Nassau County Courthouse down there on Center Street. And I went down there, and I just started looking and digging and looking. And then I found what I had been looking for. Some things I found when January 31st, 1935. Ha! I found how much? 33 acres, right? It's 100 acres now, 200 acres then, but I found 33 acres. That was the first parcel. And it cost $2,000. And then the mother load, I found August 24th, 1935, where Abraham Lincoln Lewis had written a check to Willie Scott Rivers for $500, and he said, paid in full for his house on American Beach. So if you purchased American Beach, you, not A.L. Lewis, but you, Afro-American Life Insurance, if you purchased American Beach, January 31st, 1935, blah, deed, sort of deed, blah, blah, and then August 24th, 1935, you paid in full for your house. Ta-da!
The first house
and the person who built it, Willis Scott Rivers. And as you go through history, here go Willis Scott Rivers, and he built this church, he built that church, yeah, he built this ship, you know, he did all that kind of stuff, you know. So I was happy. I got my 10 pages. Uh-huh. And that was enough. I just had 3 questions. I've got enough. I know what I want to know. I'm through with this. But I went to Corrine Brown. And Corrine is the kind of person, whatever she is today, 2017, she was that in 1946 when she was born. Now, Corrine can't cook at all, but if you needed some food or whatever, you would have the best food that you would want. Whatever. She was like an events planner. She could put things together. She has all, I heard in pain that she's up the creek now, but she's always been a service project person, and she's always been putting things together. So I go to Corrine. I say, hey, Corrine, here's my book. Here's my paper. Would you give me someone who can edit it for me? Because, you know, we want to pass this out on this program day, and I just don't want to be looking like I talk, and I don't want to be in error. I want to be formally correct. And so, of course, she sent me to this lady named Alice Grant. I went to Alice. Alice looked at that paper, and she redlined it, and she did all those kinds of things. But she was a professor at the college, at the Florida State College. It was Florida Junior College, yeah. So, you know, she acted just like a professor. She asked a few questions. Like, what was it before? It's American Beach. Who had it? Who this? Who that? Which means more research. I was not happy about that, but I wasn't as stupid as I, you know, can be. And so I just went on to answer Alice's questions. And instead of having 10 pages, I had a 200-page book. I didn't set out to write a book. I just wanted to answer my questions, but it was intriguing. And, you know, just one line and one name would, you know, form into another, and, you know, and just all of the pieces, just, it was like a map, just all coming together. And it was exciting. Oh, and it still is.
Oh, sure.
It still is.
Yeah, well, you started something with people realizing they had a story to tell, and it should be told. And there was so much information there that was valuable.
Yeah, very much.
Well, let me see if I don't want to keep you talking here forever. I had, so we did that one. How do you think your story about American Beach or American Beach's development fits into Amelia Island? I mean, because this guy, Russ, whatever his name is, he tried to fit that story. He names it American Beach, but he's got a whole lot of avenues that he pursued, and trying to fit it into history and into Florida, into the Civil Rights Movement, into everything, and links to everything. If you could just, how does American Beach fit into the history of Amelia Island? And like you mentioned that the library and this museum didn't have any information for you because, to your words, it didn't seem important.
Yeah, it was insignificant to the library, to the museum, to the keepers of the record. And it fits in because there is no Amelia Island without the people who made it, who sustained it. And so from before freedom, there were people of color who made contributions to this island's history. And with the insurance company developing a place for its people was very significant. You had segregation. However, if blacks did not have this American beach, then that would have been an element of life that they would not, it would have been on the island, but you would not have had the enjoyment of this life. And so American Beach's contribution is extremely significant to Amelia Island. In terms of resorts, American Beach, you don't look out of your eyes and see American Beach as a resort, but American Beach was a premier resort on Amelia Island before the names that we have today, what Ritz-Carlton, Omni Plantation, Summer Beach. American Beach had been the resort. It was restaurant, it was lodging, it was entertainment, recreation.
Kind of like one of the very first resorts on the island.
Yes, and still standing. It is the oldest still standing. Of course, the beach has been here, and there were, you know, like what is it, North Beach or Main Beach?
Yeah.
Those places, the beach was always here, but in terms of a resort community, you won't find a resort community older than American Beach on Amelia Island. So, yes, we cannot ignore it. Yes, that history is significant. And in the building of American Beach, if you needed a contractor, you needed a plumber, you needed an engineer, you didn't just go out and look for a colored person who could do this or a white person who could do that. You went out and looked for the person who could take that job and do the job. And the plumbing on American Beach was a white man. It was what family? Not sure. Lomond. That family, I think, is I know it's in Jacksonville. And they're still here. They're still here in on Amelia Island, but they did the plumbing work for the buildings that Mr. Rivers built.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I found A.L. Lewis paying Willie Rivers for the house, I find A.L. Lewis paying Mr. Lomond for the plumbing work.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, we need to be included in the history because we are the history.
That's what I was going to mention to you, because I lead some of the tours downtown. Mm-hmm. I just started.
Oh, good.
And it seems like we are leaving an awful lot out.
Yes.
Of the history.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I know you, as having written and researched, and that's very telling that you couldn't find any information about American Beach. Mm-hmm. It really is. I wonder, you know, what do you think? You're active with the library, and having been a librarian, how do you think we could ever get more? Someone told me yesterday that the American Beach Museum might be moving to is looking for a bigger place. I don't know if that's true or not, but the American Beach Museum that you have there,
It sure needs a bigger place.
A bigger space.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it's good having just the two separate museums?
Oh, Jesus, yes, yes, yes. American Beach has enough significant history to tell its own story.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, they need an even larger place. And when you find that you can prove to people that their story and their artifacts are significant, they will release that to you. And the more that's released, the more you can have tangible proof and evidence and illustrations of what has happened.
How did the people relate to the blacks that were living in Fernandina and the rest of the island? Was it kind of separate philosophy?
It's separate only just because of your distance, but not philosophy. Still, it's like when you want recreation, when you want welcome, then you go to where it is. And so the people here, when they want to come for recreation or come to the beach, no, I don't want to go to Main Beach. I want to go where I am appreciated, where I am comfortable. And just as they came out of Washington, D.C. and Texas, and they came from Alabama, sure, they were from here in Fernandina, they would foot it. By that, I mean they would just walk to American Beach. And so that's why when you talk to some of the olds, like if you talk to Miss Pratt, she'd probably tell you way over there, because it was way over there when you had to walk 7 miles to get there. And that's how they came to American Beach. So yes, American Beach people and Fernandina Beach people have a kinship and a relationship, but it's not one of those things of, you know, those rowdy people or those poor people are coming over here. It's we need each other. Mm-hmm. To sustain what we have.
In a couple of the things I read, it sounds like sometimes it could get pretty rowdy over it.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
And I can understand that, because I'm from New Jersey, and some of those Jersey beaches used to be the real party places that everybody went to, and you didn't care about making a lot of noise.
Oh, of course not. So, yeah, it was rowdy. But, you know, American Beach, you know, we have had early years, and now we're latter years, and American Beach is aging like people, just like people age. And so in the 50s and the 60s, you know, this is the golden era, and it was just boom, boom, boom. Well, I'm here at American Beach not because I want to sleep, not because I want to see, you know, appreciate the flora and fauna. I'm here because this is where you go to have a good time. And so now we are asleep. You know, no restaurant, no club. And so when, you know, when your grandchild comes down there, boom, thump, bump, and all that kind of stuff, it's like, get away from here.
And the grandchildren, the sad thing is they don't want to come because there's nothing but the elements, and they're certainly not coming for no nature preserve. And so therefore, they don't come.
So what do you think is the future for America?
Well, that's hard. You know, when I go out in the community today and look and see, I feel like Rip Van Winkle on the Hudson when he woke up after a 25-year sleep and like, gee, Lord, where in the world am I? And so the future of American Beach, you know, like, I only want to tell you about what's good. I only want to tell you what's beautiful. But if I were to look into the future, it is not what it was, and I see loss. I see loss of unity within the neighborhood. I see loss of cultural achievements. Not diversity, but I see, and it's diversity is coming on now. And what I see in the future is perhaps what I saw when I went to Hilton Head, when there was this island, 100% blacks, no way off, no way on, you just stuck there. But when I went there this fall, instead of 100% black, it's just a little teaching out of pocket of 7% black. And I saw opulence and money. And that's what I see closing in on American Beach. Not from, what's that, the Ritz. Not from the plantation, but from within the walls of American Beach. I see that stuff right before my eyes.
Some of the people selling their property to somebody else.
Well, it ain't about some of the people selling the property to somebody else, but it is about the people who fade away off the scene. It is about the aggressive purchaser who is one lot at a time. And you know what? People sell it. I'm going to sell. I want to die on American Beach. But one day, something's going to happen that I might be over at Jane Addams. Then once I get there, I'm not coming back. And so something's going to happen and take my property away. And if we have, let's say, if we have 100 black property owners, you know what? We're going to have 100 dead black property owners. And if, like, when I came through American Beach, well, if you die, not if you die, but, you know, I can, you know, hey, could I get this from you? Could I get that from you? That's how you get it. And so now, it's not the younger black saying, can I get this from you? Can I get this from you? It is that person who is futuristically looking and who has time on their side, let me pick it up, picking it up. And so, you know, it was a time when people were waiting you out, but now people, diverse races are not waiting you out. It's like, let me come in right here now. And you know, when whether you're from the north or whether you're from the west, when somebody comes in and they have a particular interest, the interest is, I'm bringing my experience, I'm bringing my ways, and I'm bringing change. And you either with the change for this development or you get out of the way. And that's what I see. The change is coming too quick for me.
Well, it seems like people say that everywhere, don't they?
Yeah, and it is, and it is, and you see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the even more of a reason it's good that you've done the history, and you and Ms. Myers and some of the other folks mm-hmm. have really worked hard to get the museum set up and the community center and preserve what
is
you
it
have.
That wonderful? I mean,
it is. It's wonderful that
and
all
I
that's
just hope
been done.
It stays on. It needs to be a line item in Nassau County budget. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're not there fighting for it, then you get walked over. And so, as I say, we are old, and we just get walked over and bullied and raped right now. You know, every year I would go to the Concours d'Elegance. That's about, what, 22 years or so, quarter of a century. Concours d'Elegance has been going on. The cars come. They are beautiful. The drivers come, the stories, blah, 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 blah. And so that Concours d'Elegance is raping American Beach. Well, how are we raping you? You are raping me. The Burney Park, through the permission of my county commissioner, through the permission of my county commissioner, says, yeah, you bring your trailers over here and you park your such and such over here. Those people at American Beach, you park over here at Burney Park. Those people at American Beach ain't coming out here to Burney Park. They're not coming over here to suntan in the in March, blah, blah. Park on over here. Do this. And now the county commissioners have, yes, we will shut the park down at night. No overnighters for, we had a group called Knight Sanders that's been coming there for 17 years. So we shut the park down. That means even Knight Sanders cannot come. And in Knight Sanders coming, it's like multiple generations coming to American Beach, meaning the grandma, the parent, and the child, and all like that, still nurturing, you know, fostering a care for American Beach. But, you know, that's cut out.
What is and so, Knight Sanders?
So when I say about the Concours d'Elegance, you know, you bring your tractors, you run through the streets, you park on the sides, you do all that kind of stuff. Well, you get up here and you go leave, and then you go over to the Boys Club, or you go to the YMCA, or you go any damn where you want to go, and you make these contributions. You only jack for American Beach. You know, American Beach don't get nothing but a screw, and they don't enjoy it. Sorry you asked that question. Now, what is Knight Sanders?
I asked that question. No, I'm
so glad. So what is Knight Sanders? Okay, eras of American Beach. In the 60s, you had the Flower Child and the hippies and this, that, and other. Well, you know, they're still living. It's just old. And so they used to have this party on American Beach, and it was, what did they call it? Virgo Bash. Now, Michael Stewart is at the Jacksonville Airport Authority. And we are so proud of Michael. We are proud of Michael's family. But, you know, to his great-grandparents and all like that. But Michael is a very successful person. And in the 60s, he used to host this party. He and his friends who were Virgo people born in September and stuff. And they would host this party. It was a fabulous party. People would come again. Not just from Duval County, not just from Fulton County in Atlanta. They would come from all over, come from Washington, D.C., come from California. They would come to the party, and the beach would just blossom. This is in September. Everybody's gone home because, you know, you think of the beach as from Easter to Labor Day. So here we are, the third week in September, and they're having this party. People sprawl all over the beach, camping on the beach, doing all that stuff. Having wonderful, wonderful parties and great times as always. So this is in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And by the time the 90s come, it got to be that everybody knew the third weekend in September, come on down to American Beach. But if you're not invited, you don't need to come. But hey, I'm coming to the party. So
party
once, 1993, the radio station put the information on the radio to the public. And also there were people selling t-shirts and all this, you know, just a bonanza and stuff. So Michael and the Virgo Bash people realized, you know what, we cannot be responsible for this public party.
let's cut it out. And so they cut it out. Now, who are the Night Sanders? The Night Sanders is one of those kids who was a part of the Virgo Bash. And he says, his name is Ronald Starling. So Ronald says, you know, and he talked with Marvine and the beach lady. And the beach lady told, gave him a charge, like, you know, Ron, you've got to keep the integrity and the culture of American Beach going. Please bring the people in because people are slipping away. So that's exactly what Ron began. I think this is about 17 years from now. I don't know how much that is. You have to do math. I never was good at math. But anyhow, so 17 years ago, Ron had a rebirth in his health was bad. He nearly died. And then he decided, like, I'm going to... 17 years ago, that was 2000. Shucks, I can do that math. Anyhow, so Ron decided that I'm going to take a more serious look at my life and appreciate what qualities I have, and let me take the charge that Marvin gave me to keep American Beach going. And so, of course, he's a former Virgo Bash person. He reaches out to the people here, there, da da da. And he says, y'all, come on, let's come back to the beach. And they come and they set up tents. They camp out. They have cultural workshops. They bring in speakers. They have food. Michael's brother, Dennis Stewart, known as Mr. Natural, would do the cooking. And of late, they would get the Clara White Mission, the culinary school over in Jacksonville. They hire them to come over and do the cooking for them. But this year, when Mr. Ron Starling went to the county commissioner's meeting, I think it was in March, he was in for a rude awakening when he found that there is no parking at Burney Park overnight. And see, they would come and park at Burney Park and go down on the beach where their tents were. And the restrooms on the beach closed at 8 o'clock. So that cut out facilities, no park and no restroom. But so this is in March when he finds out. But the people who are geared up, they came twice a year. They came in October and they come in May. And so they're ready to come. I'm in Miami. I'm in South Carolina. They're ready to come. So some of them still did come down, but it was just a change, not a subtle change, a real change that affects their use of American Beach. Because I'm not coming from South Carolina and Atlanta
and not be able to use the bathroom after 8 o'clock.
Right, right. And then to have to take my car and move it some other place. And so
it was a pretty quiet gathering.
I don't know what it was. It was Saturday, May the 20th, and I was honored over in St. Augustine, and when I came for by some friends, but when I, because of my library projects and things, but when I got back, I'm different. I can't multitask. I can do one thing a day, but I can't do, this happens at 10, and this is at 2, and this is at 8. Oh, fine, I can make it. All right, don't work.
I'm like that myself, too, now. So it sounds to me like you kind of see American Beach as more than just the properties and the piece of land. You kind of describe something that's more like a whole feeling and a whole era. So that, like these having parties on the beach, that's American Beach. It's the party way of life and the openness and the friendliness and the inviting. That's kind of a spirit.
And that keeps us alive because, you know, as you go there and you see these little children being nurtured, you know that this is the place to go. If mama brought me here, grandmama brought me here, I'm going to keep coming. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to see myself in a house. I'm going to see myself as a part of this community. But if you don't have that nurturing,
you're not going to be able to see the appreciation for the place. Yeah.
Well, you certainly have told me a lot of things.
Oh.
And after reading all your books and these other things, man, it's just so interesting. But I would like to try to figure out, I don't know, just how to tell a more inclusive story, you know, about Amelia Island and Bernardina Beach that includes everybody. That's had such a big role in the history of it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's enough, I guess, for today, Marcia, and I'm going to ask you if you have any final things you'd like to say into our microphones.
No, I hadn't thought about anything final, but I just enjoy talking and sharing about American Beach, and I'm just so happy that you are doing this project, not just American Beach, but capturing the voices of the people of Amelia Island, who have made us the great place we are and the place that people want to be, want to come. And, you know, people, I find that there's a lot of hospitality and there's warmth. And for you to capture it, arrest it, and let the future, 50 years from now, see the flavors of Amelia Island's people. And I'm just so glad that you're dedicated to getting this done.
Thank you for doing this for the museum. And that's all. Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you. Bye. And have a great long weekend.
You too.